This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Okay, let's move into the shiur. Thank you all for joining once again. And we're on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, starting the new sugya at the two dots. Where the Gemara starts with referring back to the Mishnah, as it usually does, and the piece of Mishnah that the Gemara is going to be focused on is the statement in the Mishnah that kesef is one of the three ways that a financial transaction is one of the three ways that a woman can be acquired for kiddushin, or that the rights of her exclusivity, the way we defined it in the Mishnah, the rights to her exclusivity can be acquired in an act of kiddushin performed by means of a financial transaction, that being kesef. And the Gemara starts right away by saying, minalo. Where do we get that from? Where does that come from? Which is a bit of a strange kasha for the Gemara to start off with, because we've already had kicho kicho mistei Ephron. The Gemara already went into quite a lot of detail to say that we learn from Avram's acquisition of the Ma'arasa Machpelah, where the acquisition was done by means of kesef, and kicho is the same word that is used in the case of kiyikach ish isho, and therefore the Gemara's assumption was that kesef, using that gezeirah shova, that kesef is one of the valid forms of acquisition for the act of kiddushin. So one would wonder why the Gemara says minailon, were it not for Rashi telling us already then on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. If you flip back to Daf Beis Amud Aleph at the bottom, where it says the kesef minalon, that's the very first thing that the Gemara asks. Three, four lines from the bottom of the Gemara says the kesef minalon. Where do we know from that kesef works? So that's already been discussed. Why are we discussing it again? Why is the Gemara asking the question again here? And Rashi says, lav hocha koboilo, ela lekamon. This, on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, is not really the place that we're dealing with the source, the Torah source for the appropriateness of a kinyan kesef in the case of kiddushin. Ela lekamon, that gets done on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, which is the sugya we're about to start. V'hocha haimataritz ka'omola lekule milta. Here, the answer, this is all part of the answer to the original question of the Gemara, where the Gemara asked, Maishno hacha detaneha ish niknes, maishno hosam detaneha ish mekadesh. So this is all in the answer to that question. The question is, why do we use the word niknes? That's what the Gemara is dealing with on Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara is not dealing with why is kinyan kesef valid. The Gemara is talking about why is the word niknes, which you'll remember the Tosfos Chachmei Anglia said was quite a derogatory term, and therefore the Gemara expresses some surprise that we would use the word niknes. Why do we use such a word niknes? The Gemara answers a long answer and says, Mishum dekoboy lemisni kesef, because we're going to say kesef is one of the ways that a woman can be acquired. The kesef min nylon, and where are we going to learn kesef from? This kicho kicho, and so it goes on. So this is all dealing with the question of why we use the word kinyan. And the reason we use the word niknes is to include the very financial transaction, the transaction that is so financial in nature, that is the kinyan kesef. That's what the Gemara on Daf Beis Amud Aleph is dealing with. It's not dealing with the origin. Here on Daf Gimel, and if you flip back to Daf Gimel Amud Beis, to our sugya, you'll see Rashi again repeats that in the first thin line of Rashi, bekesef minalon, hocho ikar. This is the main part of the sugya. Here we're really getting into it. Ule el agav groro nokitle litirutzi loshen kinyan demasnisin. And previously we were just doing that, by the way, to deal with the language of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah uses niknes. Why use the word niknes? That's why the Gemara went into it on Daf Beis Amud Beis. But that's not what the Gemara's intention is. To do it, but the intention of the Gemara on Daf Beis was not to go into the origins of kinyan kesef. That's something we're going to be doing here in our sugya. That's fine, but we'll see in Tosfos that it appears that Tosfos doesn't agree. That Tosfos holds that we have learned the concept of kinyan kesef already. And we've learned it from kicho kicho, and we'll discuss that when we get into the Tosfos a little bit later. So we now understand the Gemara, b'kesef minalan, v'tu, and furthermore, the Gemara throws in a second question. Hoditznan, this which we learnt in a Mishnah in Ksubis on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, ho'av zakai b'vitoi b'kidusheho b'kesef b'shtar uv'bir, a father has a schus in his daughter, that is, in her kiddushin through kesef, through shtar, or through bir. Minalon de Mekanya, so let's rephrase the question, says the Gemara. Firstly, minalon de Mekanya, where from do we get it that she can be acquired by kesef? De Mekanya be kesef. Be kesef, and secondly, de avuahu, where do we get it from? That in the case that she is acquired by kesef, when she's a katana or a naro, where do we get it from that kesef belongs to the father? Two questions. Now, the first question we've dealt with, where do we know from that it's that kinyan kesef works? We understand why the Gemara is asking that question. What's a little more puzzling is why does the Gemara go on to the question of who says that money belongs to the father? Our Mishnah doesn't deal with that. Our Mishnah doesn't talk about that. That's the case. That's the Mishnah in Ksubis. In the Mishnah in Ksubis says the father has the right to that money. And then the Gemara goes into it. The Gemara in Ksubis on Daf Mem Vav is almost a mirror image of this Gemara. It's almost identical. So the Gemara here in Kiddushin almost transposes it, cuts out that piece like a cut and paste. It takes that piece of Gemara out of Kiddushin and it pastes it in here. It takes that piece of Gemara in Ksubis and it kind of pastes it into Kiddushin. And part of it is fine, but if we're going into the whole question of why the father is Zoche in the case of Kiddushin, that makes sense for us to ask that question in Ksubis. That doesn't make sense for us to ask that question here. We're not even dealing with the father over here. Why do we do that? And what is the Havamina even? Why do we think it doesn't belong to the father? Clearly, if the father gives away his daughter in marriage, and we're talking again about a katana or a naro, clearly the money belongs to him. Why would the money not belong to him? There's a piece of beautiful Reboruch Ber. Reboruch Ber is just amazing on this Masechta, in the opening pieces and laying down principles and expanding ideas. And he claims that what the Gemara is concerned about is, does the father perhaps act as a shaliach and not as a principal? Is the father possibly an agent in this rather than a principal? That means he can give her away even without her intention and without her agreement, and that would probably be because of the principle of Zachin Lodom Shaloi Befonov. You can do something that is good for a person even if they don't know about it. And therefore, maybe the father, when the father gives his daughter away, certainly a naro, if not a ketana, we understand that he's really acting on her behalf. But a naro, has some kind of legal status. She has a lot of legal status as a naro. That's a girl who's over 12 years old, but not yet 12 and a half. And in the case of naro, at least, when the father gives her away, maybe he's acting as a shaliach. If he's acting as a shaliach, as an agent rather than as a principal, then the money doesn't belong to him. He has the right to choose the husband. He has the right to give her away to that husband. But the money that comes from that, if he's only acting as an agent, would really belong to the girl and not to the father. That's what Reboruch Ber wants to explore. But even that is difficult to understand. It doesn't really resolve my issue of this isn't the place to be talking about that. I understand we're discussing, is he a shliach, is he this? That's good for Ksubis. There's a Mishnah in Ksubis that says the father is entitled to the money. So I understand we now have a discussion as to what is the basis of that entitlement. And on what basis does he give away the daughter? Is he a shliach or is he a principal? I understand all of that. But that does not explain why we would be putting this in our Gemara here. What leads us to this? And I wonder whether we can't say that it stems from our discussion in the last piece. You'll remember in the last piece, specifically according to the Girsa of Rashi and the other Rishonim, if not the Girsa of Rabbeinu Tam, the reason that a less than a shove pruta doesn't work, and the reason that therefore chalifin doesn't work, is because befochus mishove pruto loy mekanyo nafsho. A woman doesn't give herself away for less than a shove pruto. If it's not even called kesef, less than a shove pruto is not kesef. If it doesn't have the value of kesef, a woman doesn't willingly give herself away. It's possible that that leads us into the question now, because then at least for a ketana and a nahara, what happens if the father's willing to accept? For him, it's not a gunai. I understand when a woman is giving herself away, her view of her value and what she's willing to accept and what she isn't willing to accept is her own business. But when her father gives her away, surely it's for him to decide, and he might be willing to do that. So by the fact that we place the whole, or we root the reasoning of chalipin not working and the reasoning of less than a shove pruta not working, we root in the girl's subjective sense of valuing, not that particular girl, but women in general, as we explained, that would seem to imply that the money belongs to the girl, that she has a right over it. She has the right to say, I won't accept less than a pruta. What right has she got to say, lemekanya nafsho, if it belongs to the father? So at least in the case of less than a nairo, it should be irrelevant what's used. It should be up to the father to negotiate. If it's purely a financial transaction between the father and the chosen, then it's a transaction between two men. It's not even a transaction. There isn't a woman in the transaction. The woman is the object being transacted, not the woman herself, but the rights to the woman's exclusivity is a right that is being transacted between two males. If it's being transacted between two males, who cares whether the woman is mekanya nafsha b'fochas mishove pruto or not? So there seems to be, from that statement, a suggestion that maybe the money doesn't belong to the father. Maybe the money belongs to the girl. How is that possible? How could the money belong to the girl? Now we can use Reb Oruch Be'er. The way the money might belong to the girl is if the father is acting as a shliach. Then the money wouldn't belong to him. He wouldn't be a principal. He would be an agent. And the girl would be entitled to it. That seems to be a possible implication in the previous sugya. However, we have a Mishnah in Ksubas. That's what brings the Mishnah in Ksubas in. You can't say that because the Mishnah in Ksubas says, Ha'av zakai b'kidusheho b'kesef. That even though we're talking about a Naharon, because those Mishnayos are talking about a Naharon specifically in that area of Ksubas, that means in the case of a Naharon, the Mishnah in Ksubas Daf Memvov is telling us that Ha'av zakai b'kidusheho b'kesef, that a father is zoche in her kiddushin in kesef. So we can't say that she's entitled to that. It must be that even though she's the one who determines whether or not she's willing to be makneh herself for less than a shove pruto, the money in the case of a ketana and a naira doesn't belong to her, it belongs to the father. Minalon, where do we learn that from? Now we begin to understand to some degree the process of the Gemara. So minalon, where do we know from the two? Hadat nahav zakai bevitu b'kiddushol b'kesef b'shtar bevi or minalon? The mekanya b'kesef, the kesef d'avua. How do we know that the kinyan kesef works, and how do we know that the kinyan is of the fathers? Rashi comments on that Mishnah in Ksubas, and he comments here and in Ksubas. And he says, if you look in our Rashi, in the next piece of Rashi, that's the third thin line of Rashi, zakai bevitoi, he has a zchus in his daughter, shehakesef yihyeh shelo, that the money belongs to him, v'hu mekabel hashtar, and in the case of shtar, he accepts the shtar. V'hu moistro lebiyo al korcho l'shem kiddushin b'oido naro. And he has the right to hand her over to a man who can be makadish her using kinyan biyo, even if she doesn't want to, even if she disagrees. So Rashi's explaining the three cases. Again, we're going into a little bit of an analysis of the Mishnah in Ksubas, because it becomes now rather relevant for our situation here. And Rashi's explanation is, in the case of what does it mean? What is the schus of the father in the kiddushin of the girl? So what is the Mishnah saying? The father has a schus, he has a right in the kiddushin of a girl, whether the kiddushin is by kesef, by shtar, or by bio. Now the Yerushalmi asks, the Yerushalmi in Kesubis, not the Yerushalmi here, the Yerushalmi starts right away with an almost obvious kesef and says, Nicho b'kesef uvishtar ha'av zakai. I understand why a father, what it means when we say a father has a right in the kesef and the shtar. And what does that mean, that I understand that he has a right? Because kesef and shtar have financial value. So shtar has value, and even a shtar written on an ordinary scrap of paper, the paper is worth more than a pruto, because it can be used. The Gemara always says to plug a bottle, you can have a bottle of wine and you've lost the cork, you can use a shtar, you can roll up a piece of paper and plug it in. So it has value. So even the paper on which a shtar is written has value. Certainly if it's written on a beautiful parchment by a calligrapher and it's a work of art, then it certainly has value. So I understand, says the Yerushalmi, that kesef and shtar have financial value, and therefore ha'av zoiche b'kidusheho b'kesef b'shtar. I understand what that means, that a father can be zoiche in the financial value of the kesef and the shtar used in the kiddushin kinyan. But what about bio? What kind of zechus does the father have if he hands her over for bio? That's a zechus. Who has any kind of benefit from that? The prospective husband does, and hopefully the bride does, but the father doesn't. What does he get out of it? Answers the Gemara, the Yerushalmi. Tipater shi yomar loy. Understand this in a situation where a prospective groom says to the father, if you allow me to be Mekadesh your daughter with bio, I will pay you this amount of money. Here's an amount of money that belongs to you. If you will allow me to be Mekadesh your daughter, who's a Naro or Ketana, bevio. Now, we've already said that it's also to do that. We're talking about the mechanics of kinyonim rather than the morality of the transaction. Such a transaction would be immoral, both on the side of the father and on the side of the husband, of the groom. So we're not talking here about the morality of it, we're talking about the technicality of the kinyon. Says the Yerushalmi, if a man were to say, in other words, the father could trade with all three kinyonim. He can trade with her rights by giving her to a man for kesef, kinyan kesef. He can trade with a man by kinyan shtar, where he gets the rights to the paper on which the shtar is written, and he can trade with the rights to be koineh her bebiyo by selling those rights. Says the Yerushalmi, that's what it means. But you'll notice that the Bavli doesn't say that, or Rashi rather doesn't say that. Rashi says, in the case of kesef, we look back in our Rashi, zakai bevito shiha kesef yeshelo. In the case of kesef, we're talking about transaction. For whom mekabel hashtar? But in the case of shtar, we're not talking about financial value. We're simply talking about authority. He has the authority to be mekabel the shtar. V'hu moisro lebio al korcho l'shem kiddushim b'oid onaro, and he also has the right to hand her over bevio while she's still a naro. So Rashi is learning differently from the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is saying when the Mishnah in Ksubas Daf Mem Vov says that a father has rights to his daughter's kiddushin, bekesef bishtar v'bio, it's talking about financial rights. Asks the Gemara Yerushalmi, I understand there are financial rights in kesef and shtar. What financial rights are there in bio? Answers the Yerushalmi, the father can trade in the kiddushin bevio, and he can sell those rights. He can give it to a man to be Mekadesh or Bevio and take money for that transaction. He can trade in it. And therefore, all three of these kinyonim have commercial value, and the father is entitled to that commercial value. That's what the Mishnah in Ksubas means. Rashi says something different. Rashi says, yes, he has the financial rights to kesef. If the man is Mekadesh, the woman using kinyan kesef, the kesef used for the kinyan belongs to the father. But in the case of shtar and bio, says Rashi, it's talking about authority, not about commercial value. He merely the fact that he has the right to give her over. He can be mekabel. Somebody can come to him. He could be in New York, and the girl could be in Yerushalayim. And somebody could come to him in New York and say, here's a shtar. And on the shtar it says, Harei, Bitcho mekudeshesli b'shtar zeh. I want to marry your daughter. Here's a shtar. He can be mekabel that shtar. He can accept that shtar. And from the moment of acceptance of that shtar, she becomes an eshes ish. She becomes an arusa, sitting in Yerushalayim. because this father in New York accepted the shtar. That's the authority of a father over a ketana and over a naira. Similarly, the father can choose to give her bevir. Somebody can ask, or he can offer, he can give away her rights to be mekadesh, this girl bevir, even against her will. That's authority. So there is a difference between Rashi in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi as to what the definition of zakai is. What does it mean to have schus, to have rights in something? What is a right? In fact, that's really, we're getting to something very fundamental here. What is a right? And here's a great example of where, when we're learning Kiddushin or Kesubis or Bava Metzia, the subject is not, the subject of the sugya is very seldom the objects that are being discussed. So if you're learning Shor Shenogach Esaporo, if you're learning a case of an ox goring a cow, what's being discussed is not oxen goring cows. What is being discussed is certain relationships between a person who causes damage and a person to whom damage is caused, using their property, not their own bodies. And in each situation where the Gemara discusses, in any sugya, it's very important for the learner of Gemara to unravel what is really the subject, what is being discussed here. And here, although we're discussing something very theoretical, giving a young girl away bevi or something that's not even allowed, or a father just accepting a shtar and the girl not even knowing about it or disagreeing with it, all of these cases, that's not really what we're discussing. Right now, in this little piece that we're discussing this morning, or this afternoon or evening, depending where in the world you are, right now what we're discussing is what does it mean to have a right in something. That's really, this is not even about Kiddushin, it's using Kiddushin as a model by which to determine a definition for rights and for ownership of rights. According to Yerushalmi, ownership of rights must be translatable into economic value. There has to be some financial value in a right. So to say that, that's why the Yerushalmi asks, I understand that there's a right in Kinyan Kesef, because there's financial value to Kinyan Kesef. I even understand that there's a right to Shtar, because there's some financial value in Shtar, small, but it exists. I do not understand how there can be financial value to Bia, because there's no financial benefit to that. Answers the Gemara, there is. He can sell those rights. He can trade. It's a tradable commodity. To be Mekadesh, a woman Bevio, is a tradable commodity, and you can sell it. And therefore, there is a financial right. No, says Rashi. Rights, ownership of a right does not necessarily mean that it's translatable to economic value. It could be translatable to some other form of value. What's important about it is authority. If I have the right to dispose of something, I have rights in that object. That's what tests it. According to Yerushalmi, is what tests my rights is my ability to transfer it into cash. According to Rashi, it's not about cash, it's about the rights of disposal. If I can choose what to do with something, then it becomes mine. We'll see a concept a little further on. In fact, we'll see it possibly even in Tosfos, we'll see a concept of that the father has the right to hand her over to a manuvel umukeshchin. He can give his daughter away to somebody who's disgusting, who's unappealing, who's ugly, or who's plagued with boils, somebody who she finds despicable. Theoretically, again, it's not moral to do that, not permitted to do that, but theoretically he can. Technically, he can give her away to a man who she finds totally disgusting, a man who would never be able to get such a girl. And why would he do it? The father, for money. So if he's desperate for money and there's some wealthy, really ugly man who's willing to pay, he can trade in that. So according to the Yerushalmi, it's the tradability. That's the fact that he can hand her over to a manuvel or a mukeshchin shows that it's tradable. No, says Rashi, that just shows what degree of authority he has. He can give her to whoever he wants. He can give her to somebody she would never choose. That's the authority that he has. And Rashi mentions nothing about it being tradable. If you look in Tosfos, go over to the Tosfos now, in the middle of the page, Ha'av Zakai Bevito, the Tosfos brings the Yerushalmi. Mefarish be Yerushalmi. Sheyesh lo schus bevia shenoisin lo schar lekadesh bevia. The reason he has a schus in bia is because there are people who will be willing to pay money for the rights to be mekadesh with bia. That's what Tosfos says. So Tosfos brings the Yerushalmi into our sugya and introduces economic value as the factor in bia too. But Rashi studiously avoids economic value in anything but kesef. Again, the Rashi, Zakai bevito sheha kesef yeh shaloi. In kesef, that means economic value. Why? Because in kesef, when you transact for money, the right to dispose of always entails economic value. If you're selling something for cash, then of course there has to be economic value in it. So in Kinyan kesef, the benefit is economic. But in shtar and bio, the benefit does not need to be economic. If I agree to, if I do a favor for somebody, I have traded because that person now owes me something. If I give my daughter away to somebody who wants her using Kinyan shtar or using Kinyan bio, if that's what he wants, he owes me one. Doesn't mean that he owes me a predetermined amount of money. That's not what that's about. Says Rashi, that's also rights. The right to dispose of, the right to take something and give it to somebody else, even not for money. The fact that I'm giving something to somebody else creates value because it creates indebtedness in the other person towards me. And that indebtedness is an asset to me. It's not necessarily a financial asset. It's not necessarily an asset that has commercial value, but it is an asset. And that means I have a schus. If I can convert a right into an asset, then it's my right. That right belongs to me. And so in the case of kesef, I convert it into financial asset. In the case of shtar, and in the case of bio, it's a moral indebtedness that the other person has towards me because I've given the girl away. Unlike the Yerushalmi, unlike Tosfos, that treats everything as kesef. Now, there is a halachic nafkimina. This is not only a conceptual discussion between Rashi and Tosfos in this case. It's the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. According to Rashi, there is a machlokes between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and according to Tosfos, there is not. What's the machlokes in the Bavli and Yerushalmi according to Rashi? Well, there's the conceptual machlokes. Is right defined purely by economic value, or can right be defined by being able to convert that right into any form of value, any form of asset and indebtedness? That's the conceptual machlokes between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. But there is a halachic nafkimina as well that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman points out. And that is, if we say, as the Yerushalmi does, that ha'av zakai bekesef bishtar, ha'av zakai bekidushel bishtar means that the shtar belongs to him, that the financial value of the shtar belongs to the father, then we must assume that in all cases of kiddushin bishtar, whether it's a ketana, naro, where the father is the beneficiary of the shtar, or whether it's a gedola, a boigeres, where the girl herself is the beneficiary of the shtar, one thing is clear from the Yerushalmi, and that is the shtar has to be given over. The recipient, either the father or the girl herself, if she's old enough, needs to be zoiche in the shtar. There needs to be a physical shtar that has some form of value and that can be handed over. The Ksos HaChoshen, by the way, says that's not so, because then it would be kesef. If the shtar has value and you're handing over and you're using the value of the shtar, then that would be kesef. That would be a form of shove kesef, of being mekadesher with the value of the shtar, which is worth more than a pruto. But Rabbi Chanan says no. In the case of the Yerushalmi, it would appear that the shtar itself has to have some kind of value, and that value has to be acquired by the father and the girl if the girl is old enough. Not as kesef, but that's part of the definition of shtar. When you're koine bishtar, you've got to use a physical piece of paper, which means you could not do a shtar on the internet, you could not do an electronic version of a shtar and email it to the other person, no matter how securely you were able to sign it and witness it theoretically. That wouldn't work for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons it wouldn't work is the shtar itself, it might have all the content, might have the right wording, it might have the correct validation by Edim. Everything might be perfect, except there's no physical shtar in which the recipient is zoche. And according to the Yerushalmi, it's clear that a recipient must be zoche in a shtar. Not so in Rashi. In Rashi, here on the Bavli, we're saying, Av zoche b'shtar doesn't mean that he has the rights in the piece of paper that he can use as a bottle stop. That's not what it means. Av zoche b'shtar means he has the right to accept the shtar and thereby commit his daughter to marriage without her knowledge, without her intention, without her agreement. That's his authority. Av zoche b'kidusheho is a measure of authority, the rights of disposal. It has nothing to do with ownership of the piece of paper on which the shtar is written. So according to Rashi, then, there would be no necessity to own the piece of paper, to transact the piece of paper, to transfer the paper from one person to another. That's not what does the Kinyan Shtar. What does the Kinyan Shtar is the writing of it, the witnessing of it, the writing out of the Shtar, the witnessing of it, and then to do a Kinyan as we do before a Chuppah, so over the Ksuba. The witnesses sign the Ksuba, and the Chosun picks up a sudor as an act of kinyan that he accepts upon himself all the obligations that are written in the Ksuba. So even before he's handed it over, it's not the handing over necessarily, according to Rashi in the Bavli, that creates the obligation. The signing, witnessing, and acceptance of the conditions of the shtar are themselves what creates the chiyuv, and here what gives the right. So according to Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, there is an interesting difference between the Yerushalmi on the one hand and the Bavli according to Rashi on the other hand. And the difference is whether you need to transact the rights in the piece of paper on which the shtar is written. The question is, why would Rashi create such a machlokes? Why doesn't Rashi just learn like Tosfos and say this is exactly the same case as exactly the same as the Yerushalmi works it, that just as in Kesef we're talking about financial benefit, that's the right that the father has in the Kinyan Kesef, so the right that the father has in the Kinyan Bio is the right to sell it. Why do we not say that? As Tosfos says, Shesh l'schus b'vio, sh'noisin l'schai, l'kadish b'vio. The reason could be that there is in fact a machlokes Yerushalmi and Bavli, which Rabbi Chanan also cites, as to whether you're permitted to write a shtar on paper or parchment that is osur b'hanor midoraisa, where from the Torah's law, you may have no benefit from it. So it might be an object of Avodah Zorah or whatever. It might be some piece of paper or piece of parchment from which you can have no benefit. Is a shtar written on such a document, on such a piece of paper, valid or not? And says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, that's really the same argument. If there needs to be value in the paper and that needs to be transacted as part of Kinyan Shtar, not as a Kinyan Kesef, but as part of Kinyan Shtar, then I cannot write a shtar on an object, on a piece of paper or parchment that has no value because it's osur b'hanor. We're not permitted to benefit from it at all. That means the giver is not permitted to benefit, the recipient is not permitted to benefit. I wouldn't be allowed to use it. And that is the view of the Bavli. The Yerushalmi says that one is permitted to write on such a document because we're not getting hanor, we're not getting benefit from the document, from the parchment. It's the words, it's the communication, it's the content, which it's the intention, it's not the document. The piece of paper itself is irrelevant. So according to Yerushalmi, it might appear that in the event that we could properly document and do kinyonim on a shtar using an internet form, and email it rather than hand it over, according to the Yerushalmi, maybe that would be possible, because the actual material, the matter of the document is not relevant in the transaction. And that's why, according to the Yerushalmi, it could be written on an Isur Hanor. Whereas according to the Bavli, it cannot be written on an Isur Hanor. And Rabbi Chanan suggests maybe that's because the Bavli holds that the document needs to be transferred and the recipient needs to achieve schus in it. He needs to acquire some schus, some rights in the actual paper or parchment. And so Rashi is not creating a new machlokes, Bavli and Yerushalmi. In fact, Rashi is merely extending the existing machlokes, Bavli and Yerushalmi, to this particular sugya. And that's why he goes out of his way to say that in the case of shtar and bio, this is not about rights in the shtar. This is about, it's not about rights in the shtar or rights in the bio. In a financial sense, it's the rights of disposal. It's the rights of authority rather than the rights of any kind of monetary value. There is a third view, which is the view of the Tosfos HaRosh that comes somewhere in the middle. And the Tosfos HaRosh says, in the case of Kesef, he gets the rights in the money itself. In the case of Bio, he learns like Tosfos that he has the right to sell the Bio. But Shtar, he doesn't have rights in the Shtar. And Shtar is just included because we're talking about all three. So when it says Ha'av Zakai B'Kiddusheho B'Kesef B'Shtar B'Bio, it doesn't really mean that he's Zoche financially in the Shtar. He's possibly not Zoche. There doesn't need to be any Zchus in the Shtar. There doesn't need to be any rights in the matter of the Shtar. And that could be why our Tosfos mentions the financial value of Bio but does not mention the financial value of Shtar. So once again, in the case of the Yerushalmi itself, it would appear that Yerushalmi is talking about the financial commercial value of all three transactions. Ha'av Zakai, the father, has rights in the money that comes from, that flows from her kiddushin, whether it's kesef, shtar, or bia. There's money in all three cases, and the money belongs to him. On the other extreme, Rashi says that we're talking about the money that flows from kinyan kesef. But in the case of shtar and bia, there is no flow of money, or there need not be any flow of money. There's still a right there. The right is the right of authority, the authority to dispose. And then we have Tosfos and Tosfos HaRosh, who says it is financial value, like the Yerushalmi, but the financial value is in the kesef, and it is in the bia. In those two cases, there's financial value. But in the case of shtar, there is not necessarily financial value. There's no need for the father to be zoche in the value of the shtar, because if we say the shtar has to have value, then, as the Tosfos HaRosh says, then it becomes kesef. And then it's no longer a kinyan shtar. The whole idea of a kinyan shtar is that it has no financial value. And so they will learn the Mishnah in Ksubas HaKesef, Ha'av Zakai B'Vito B'Kiddushiho B'Kesef B'Shtar U'V'Bio, as talking specifically about kesef and bio, and just throwing shtar in because that's, those three always go together, but not because technically he has any right in the shtar per se. That's the way that we unravel this piece of Rashi and the Tosfos on it. Let's go a little bit further into the Gemara before we stop. So minaylan de mekanya bekesef, v'kesef da'avuahu. How do we know from that she's niknes bekesef, and how do we know that in fact the money does belong to the father? In the case of Kenyan Kesef. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Rav Yehuda Omar Rav brings the posuk, the Omar Kro. The posuk he brings is V'yotzo Chinom Ein Kosef. Now we're going to be dealing with this posuk quite a lot in the sugya. So for the next year, it would probably be worthwhile your having your Chumash open. Probably best just to have a Tanakh, because we're going to be dealing with Psukim from Dvorim, from Bamidbar, and from Shmos. This particular posuk is in Dvorim Chof Dalet, and it's the posuk is Ki Yikach Ish. This particular posuk is in Shmos, chapter Chof Aleph, and it's Ve'im Shalosh Eile Lo Ye'aselo V'yotzo Chinom En Kosef. That's talking about a case of an Amo HaIvriyo, who, when she becomes a Naro, when she shows signs of maturity, that she's becoming a Naro, she leaves the ownership of her master and does not have to pay to get herself out. There are different ways that she could get herself out. There's a year which she could become the master's wife or the wife of his son. She could buy herself out. Others could buy herself out. Or she could become a Naro. And once she shows signs of Narus, she automatically leaves the ownership of her master. And in that case, we're told, V'yotzo chinom, she goes out for nothing. Ein kosef, there is no transaction. There is no financial transaction in her emergence from that state of slavery, of Amo Ivriya. She's been an Amo Ivri, or something happens to her body. She just matures. It's a timing issue. That in itself terminates her status as Amo Ivri and gives her back her freedom. Chinom, it happens free of charge, en kosef. And then the Torah adds, there's no financial transaction. That addition of en kosef seems to be unnecessary. It seems to be redundant. And so the Gemara learns, en kesef la'adoin zeh. In this case of emergence from the authority of another adoin, of another master, there is no financial transaction. However, aval yesh kesef la'adoin acher. But there is another case where a woman emerges from the mastery of another, from the authority of another, and there is kesef, there is money that passes hands. Uman nihu, and who is that other authority? Where when she emerges from his authority, there is a monetary exchange. That, says the Gemara, is Av. That's the father. So from the way the Torah articulates the emergence of a Na'aro from the authority of her Adon, we can learn something about the way a young girl, a Na'aro, would emerge from the authority of her father. In the first case, there's Ein Chinom, Ein Kosef Kesef, there is no financial transaction, but in the second case, there would be a financial transaction. There is a Rashi in Ksubas that says on this very piece, how do I know that it's talking about the father? Maybe it's talking about some other case of authority. And Rashi says in Ksubas, she'ein adoin lebas Israel elo avio chutz mizeh shinim karoloi. There is no other case of adoin. There is no other case of adnus that a girl has, other than her father and this master to whom she sold as an Amo Ivriya. Just important to contextualize it. I'm sure that many of you appreciate that, but just to contextualize it for others who might be listening into the shir at some other time, it's clear from the intention of the Torah that the purpose of selling an Amo Ivriya to an Adon, to a master, is... It might be financial that a family is in a case of severe poverty and needs some cash. In the case of an Amo Ivriya, what they sell to the owner is very restricted, very limited. His obligations to her are enormous, as they are to an Eved Ivri, and even more so. He has huge obligations to take care of her and to treat her with respect. All they are selling is her labor. They're hiring her out to work for a predetermined period of time. That period of time could even be shortened, as we see, if she becomes a Na'aro in the middle of it, and the Adon pays up front. So from a cash flow perspective, instead of hiring her out and being paid a daily wage, they sell her labor forward. That's really what Avdus is. When a man sells himself as an Eved Ivri, or Beis Din sell him as an Eved Ivri, or a father sells a daughter as an Amo Ivriyo, they're simply, instead of hiring her labor out, they're selling her labor out forward. It's a little bit like in the United States, the big sportsmen, the basketball players do when they sign a contract. Instead of being paid on a game-by-game basis or a month-by-month basis, they're selling their commitment forward, and they can then be traded like an Eved. So I don't know if the celebrities would appreciate the comparison, but when they sign a contract, they really are doing what an Eved Ivri used to do. They're giving over the rights to their labor, to their skills, to their talents, to an Adon. In the case of a girl only has two Adons, says Rashi in Ksubas. One Adon is when a family sell her to an Adon. And the second reason that a family might sell her to an Adon is if they're a poor family and the girl has prospects for a shidduch. And sometimes they'll sell her to an Adon because the intention would be yield. The intention would be that they would take to this girl and take her into their family, either for the Adon himself or for one of the Adon's sons. And this is really the intention of selling the girl into slavery. But Rashi says quite clearly there's only two cases of Adon for a girl. An Adon can be the slave owner, the Amo Ivriyos owner, and the Adon can be the father of a Ktana or a Naro. There is no other Adon, which is interesting. It means a husband is not an Adon. Rashi makes that very clear. A husband is not an Adon. A husband is a Baal. And there's a difference between Baal and Adon. Perhaps next week we'll start off just exploring that a little bit more deeply. What are the differences between Baal and Adon? Because only two people can be an Adon of a girl, a father and an owner. A Baal is a different kind of relationship. He's not an owner. And he doesn't have the authority of a father, and he doesn't have the authority of an Amo Ivriya owner. His authority is a different one altogether. So I'm going to leave the shir at this point, and we'll pick up from that and learn the Gemara on further, using this posuk as the spine. This will be the center of this piece of Gemara that goes right the way down the Omud and a little bit onto the next Omud, as well as exploring some other psukim on the way. So I'm going to end the recording now. If anybody wants to ask anything, please stay on the line and feel free to do that.